April 10, 1852. McGeesey watched in amusement as the trapper bent and inspected his cages, low muttering sounds meeting her ears from her perch on the rocky outcropping above. She watched as he baited the trap again, small pieces of meat. He reset the latch and moved on, still looking irritated. He'd find every single trap the same way. The small cage traps he set for the minks, the larger ones he set for the beavers, even the deadly-looking jaw traps he set for the bears. McGeesey grinned to herself and trailed him from her path along the hill. Each empty trap resulted in a new bout of grumbles, many of them curse words she'd often heard around the white men, the French voyageurs as they called themselves. The missionaries never said words like those. McGeesey couldn't say why she found so much enjoyment in thwarting and observing the brawny Frenchmen. If she was trying to be pious, she would say that she was saving the animals, doing her duty to her forest by protecting sacred beings from this man and his endless supply of traps. And surely that was why she'd started her campaign to see him fail. It had angered her the first day she'd seen him in her forest, forest in which she was the one and only human being for miles around. And he came stomping in with his big furry boots and acted as if he had every right to be there. But part of it, too, was that the Frenchman intrigued her. She'd seen more than a few like him in her visits to the village of her family. The French were ever present, trying to convert her people to the ways of the church. For the most part, the people of her clan had gently, and with a good amount of amusement, rebuffed their attempts. Few had decided to at least hear of this god the white man spoke of. McGeesey had used the opportunity to pick up the French language, which the missionaries were more than happy to teach her, believing, as they did, that teaching her a proper language would bring her around. She'd smiled and learned, and let them think what they wanted. Besides the French, there had been Brits, and she found that language fairly easy to pick up as well. She found the Europeans amusing. They made everything so difficult for themselves all the time. So it wasn't because he was intriguing in that way. She'd been around plenty of his kind. There was more. She found his form pleasing to her eye. He was tall, easily towering over her compact form, she figured. His dark brown hair curled at the ends under the fur hat he wore, and his clear blue eyes, the way he inspected things so carefully, spoke of a certain intelligence, she supposed. But it was those moments in which he'd discovered her tampering, those moments when he cursed and, if the mood was right, laughed in consternation, that she saw more. The way his face lit up, the way the hard planes of his jaw softened, and those eyes held a warmth she found intriguing. So her game continued because it pleased her, and he knew by now, with so many moons having passed, that it was much more than animals thwarting his enterprise. Sometimes, when he talked, when he cursed, he addressed the ghost and leveled promises as to what he'd do if he ever found his nemesis. And all she could do was smile, because she was power and light, and these woods belonged to her. Here she had nothing to fear, especially not from him. She crouched on the rocks above, her pliant leathers keeping her both warm and camouflaged in the spring forest. Her boots, made by her own mother, barely made a sound as she trailed her prey. He was bent over yet another empty trap, and he held it to his nose as if he was scenting it. McGeesey watched, tilting her head, trying to get a better look at his baffling actions. The shrubbery off to her left rustled, and she was distracted by it for a moment. Watched. Some small animal, most likely. She turned her attention back to the trapper. He was definitely sniffing the trap. It went on for several moments, and when he finally reset the trap and moved along, McGeesey was sure he was possibly insane. Perhaps her games had gone on too long. And then she smiled to herself and turned toward the simple camp she called home. They hadn't gone on long enough, apparently. He was, after all, still in her woods. Luke set the last of his useless traps, irritated the entire time as he continued to waste his time in a place where he'd had nothing but failure. The fact of the matter was that his enemy, his fantôme, had continued to confound him at every turn. He'd set the traps in new locations, tried camouflaging them better, even tried spying to discover his adversary, all to no avail. Today he'd managed something he hadn't before. He detected a scent, barely there, as if his enemy was so much a part of this very forest that its scent was indiscernible from his own. It was hard to describe, the same as the fresh scent of the forest, but more. A warm undertone of something he couldn't quite identify. Luke trudged back toward the camp he shared with two of the other voyagers. He'd come out later that evening and do more investigating. As he entered the camp, he was met with the two Robillard brothers arguing, as always. Robert the elder was ready to move on to more fertile ground. Aaron, the younger, was determined to stay, as they'd managed to keep their location secret from the other trappers, and despite their bad luck, knew well that the area was full of mink and raccoon. "Put it to a vote, then," Robert said, spying Luke as he neared the fire. "Stay or go?" Luke studied the two brothers. "I am staying. I can understand, however, if you choose to move on. We are losing money as we sit here." "And should we work it out, we stand to be rich," Aaron said, looking pleadingly at his brother. "You know this man." "We've not trapped a single thing while we've been here," Robert said with a sigh. "Meanwhile, others are settling into areas probably nearly as good as this one, but without the unfortunate interference we seem to be facing. I still vote to move on." Luke clasped his hands. Honestly, he would be thrilled to get rid of the argumentative brothers. "Here is a thought. What about the area we passed through on the way here?" "Where the river divides?" Robert asked, and Luke nodded. "That area was full of raccoon, and we were successful trapping there." "Excellent. We move tomorrow," Robert said, clapping once for emphasis. Luke shook his head. "I have a better idea. You two settle there and begin trapping. Meanwhile, I will continue to work here, keeping our claim on this area. I can work at discovering the cause of our misfortune. And if and when it is eliminated, you can come back and we'll get to work. And if not, then you've already established our presence to the west of here, and we can make our fortunes there." "It's dangerous to be out here alone," Aaron began. Luke gave him a look of disbelief, and he shook his head. "I forget who I am speaking to. Never mind," he added, and Luke let out a short laugh. The brothers eventually agreed to go and give it a try, and Luke barely suppressed his sigh of relief. He'd met the brothers on his way north from Detroit, and having learned they were all from the same area, the men struck up a quick, relaxed friendship that had eventually developed into a business relationship. Luke grimaced. That would teach him to enter into agreements during alcohol-filled meetings. Arguing aside, the brothers were actually very good trappers and decent businessmen. It would have been a fine arrangement if Luke had ever felt the need for companionship for long stretches of time. But he didn't, and their constant presence grated on him. After sitting with the brothers into the night, he excused himself. He needed this. He strolled into the woods in the direction of his traps, specifically the one that had had the scent on it. Before he reached it, he began shucking his clothing, heavy hide pants and boots, a warm cotton shirt, heavy leather coat and hat. As soon as he was free of his clothing, he focused, and he felt the quick yet always painful sensation that came with turning. Fur sprouted, and his already bulky body grew until he stood well over 8 feet tall. Claws sprouted, bones popped, grew, reformed. It left him breathless every time, yet grateful. He never felt so alive as he did when he took his animal form. Like his father and grandfather before him, he shifted into a bear, but one unlike any he'd seen in the wild. He had the size of the polar bears he'd observed on his seal hunting trips to the north, the deadly claws and long fur of a grizzly, and the pure black coat of a native black bear. In full bear form, he approached the trap, sniffed at it, focusing on the scent that had no business being there. A few moments later, the scent firmly in focus, he began following it along the stream, through the woods, and finally to a small clearing. He sat on his haunches, lifted his nose into the air. His trap vandal was here, for sure. A smallish structure, built with wood and covered in animal skins, sat in the center of the clearing, a wisp of smoke coming out through a hole in the top of the tent. As he watched, he could see the flap of the tent open. A small figure came through, thin, petite, dressed in warm-looking leathers, a long wool cloak thrown over her shoulders. Long black braid, and a voice murmuring words he did not understand. A female voice. He tilted his head in surprise, then ventured closer. She stilled, zeroing in on him. This woman was much more attentive to her surroundings than many people he was used to. They stared one another down. He nearly forgot his irritation over her continual sabotage of his traps. She was stunning in every way. Long raven hair that shone in the moonlight, warm brown eyes, a narrow nose, and full lips. And her scent. No wonder he picked up on it so quickly earlier. She smelled better than anything he'd ever experienced. Wild, warm, clean. An herbal scent clung to her like a veil, and he lifted his nose and sniffed at the air, breathing it, breathing her, in. She was watching him. She spoke words in a language he didn't understand, and he tilted his head. She smiled, showing a flash of straight white teeth. She said more words in a language he did not understand, though this sounded perhaps like English. He tilted his head again. She shook her head and spoke a third time. And finally, he understood the words. She'd never seen a blue-eyed bear before. Luke raised his head and sniffed again. She continued in French. I have been harvesting herbs. Is that what you're sniffing? She smiled. You are not at all what you seem to be, are you? I've never seen a bear as magnificent as yourself in my woods. And a bear that seems to understand French, no less. He tilted his head at her in acknowledgement, sauntered closer to her small dwelling. She sat on a nearby rock and studied him. You are magical, she said breathlessly, admiring him, and it took everything in him not to puff out his chest in pride. Stunning. They sat in silence for several long moments, bear and woman taking one another's measure. Shapeshifter? She asked. I have heard of your kind. Then she laughed, and the sound of it lifted his spirits. I wonder if the man is anywhere near as magnificent as the bear. He huffed out a breath, and she laughed again. And then she stilled. He tilted his head at her again. Those eyes. Are you my adversary from the stream, perhaps? Have you come to exact your revenge on me? He knew then, that moment, that even if he had intended to hurt her, there wasn't a chance in all of creation that he could now. He stepped behind some native holly bushes, wishing he'd thought to bring his clothing along. Taking a breath, he shifted back. He was impressed by how still she sat, though her eyes widened when he started shifting. Once he was back in his human form, he and the woman studied each other in the cool night air. I am Megisi, she said, perfect French flowing from her lips. And I think the man does the bear justice. Luke smiled and bowed his head. I am Luke. And I'm freezing my testicles off. She laughed, loud, clear, and full of such joy that he found himself laughing, too. She went inside, then came out with a thick blanket, which she tossed toward the bush where he was sheltered. He wrapped up, then stepped toward her. It is a pleasure to meet you, even if you have destroyed my business for the past several weeks, Luke said, and Megisi smiled. Well, don't try to trap in my woods and we won't have a problem. She gestured toward the fire, and he nodded, seating himself on the ground nearby. He watched her and knew, the way he seemed to know where the best places were to trap or when the weather was about to go bad, that this woman would change his life forever.